Buying Woman podcast. I'm absolutely honoured today and amazed that I'm in the, I'm in Savile Row, number 14, Hackett, the head office of Hackett. And in front of me, I've got Jeremy Hackett, who's going to be doing this podcast with me. And we all know Jeremy Hackett, of course we do. But he is, well, I've got to tell you, he's dressed so well, amazingly classic, love it. Welcome to Menswear by a Woman podcast, Jeremy. It's an absolute honour and amazing to have you on board.
No, thank you very much. It's very nice to be doing the interview.
I can't tell you, I mean, Hackett and yourself, you know, you've done so much for menswear. And going back to it, when it all started, was it always this was it difficult to start, or was it quite easy to, or was it like a breeze?
Well, you know what, I've been in the clothing business since I was 16. I had a Saturday job in a tailor's shop.
Right.
And when I failed all my exams, my father said to me, if you don't pull your socks up, you're going to end up working in a shop. Like, it was the worst possible thing you could ever do. Anyway, I did end up working in a shop, a tailor's shop in Bristol, where I was brought up. From there, I was there for a couple of years till I was about 19. And then I moved to London because I felt that London was where everything happened.
Of course, yeah.
And I worked in a chain of shops on the King's Road, boutiques as they called them in those days. And I then got poached to come and work in Savile Row. And I worked just a few doors down at number 18 for a fantastic retailer called John Michael.
Okay.
And I learned a lot there. And I've always been passionate about clothes since I was probably a seven-year-old. I had my first suit made when I was seven.
Oh, wow.
For a family occasion. And so I've been obsessed with it. And so for me, it was a natural thing to come work in Savile Row. And I worked in Savile Row for about 3 years. And during that time, I would top up my salary by buying secondhand clothes.
Okay.
Which were called secondhand in those days, not vintage.
Right.
And I did it with a colleague of mine who was working at Brown's at the time.
Right.
And we would go around the markets buying stuff for a friend of ours who had a shop in, not a shop, a stall in the flea market in Paris. And so we'd buy all his secondhand clothes and then sell it to him, and he'd take it to Paris. But the thing was, we only bought the best British clothes, shoes, everything was incredibly British, which it sold incredibly well in Paris.
Right.
So we did that for a couple of years, and after that we thought, well, rather than selling it to him, why don't we sell it ourselves? So we found this little shop in the New King's Road.
Yeah.
It used to belong to the decorator, Nicky Haslam.
Okay.
And we took it because it was the cheapest shop we could find. It was £60 a week. And it was 65B New King's Road. We couldn't afford the A bit, so we just had the B. And so we opened the shop, and it was decorated like you were walking into a little gentleman's shop.
Okay, right. Okay, wow.
And everything was laid out properly. Everything was on wooden hangers. Everything was sized and priced. So it wasn't like an ordinary secondhand shop at all. And people would come in and they wouldn't realise it was secondhand until they say to you, have you got this in a 42 or a 44? I said, no, there's only one. It either fits or it doesn't. And that, for almost from day one, that just took off.
Wow.
And I have to say, there was no business plan, no marketing plan, and no money. And our bank manager lent us a couple of thousand quid.
Okay.
And he said, you do realise it's a retailer's graveyard where we were opening. Fortunately, we proved him wrong, and it just absolutely flew. And we did the second hand for about 3 or 4 years. The problem was we couldn't keep up with the demand. And rather than trading down, we thought, well, let's start making some new clothes.
Oh, right.
So The idea really was to do a sort of Savile Row look, but ready to wear. So all the cloth and fabrics were from the same mills that Savile Row used. The cut had the look of Savile Row.
Right.
And at the time it was sort of 3-button jackets and pleated trousers. And so the whole look was completely out of step with anything that was happening in the 80s fashion world at the time.
Right.
But it just took off. I mean, it was remarkable. And that was, I think once we started doing new clothes and putting our own label into it, we then realised that, well, maybe this is a brand. you know, and because nobody in those days really talked about brands.
No.
You were just retailers.
Right, okay.
But having worked at John Michael, who was absolutely fanatical about his brand, and if anything ever came into the shop and didn't have his label in it, off the floor it went until it had a John Michael label in. And I learned a lot from that, that, you know, the importance of a brand is that everything is, you're selling Hackett, that's it, you know. And so it was a really good experience. And from the second hand,
yeah.
Which was mostly old bespoke suits, old handmade shoes, luggage, and I used to sell to Ralph Lauren, who was a very good customer.
Okay,
yeah.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, so it took off, and then we expanded, we opened a shop in Sloane Street, big shop,
right.
And that really was the end of the Fulham days, you know, the New King's Road.
Yeah.
So we closed all, we have five little shops there,
right.
All specialising in different aspects of second-hand clothes.
Okay.
And then we moved it all to Sloane Street, all new, and that just took off. I mean, it just was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, compared to starting it all up during those times, what did you find it difficult in trying to get it all together? Was it really hard work?
I didn't really think of it as hard work. We were just getting on with it, you know,
okay.
And it was fun. It was terrific fun. The only problem was that we didn't really have a decent accountant. So
okay.
We sort of, I mean, I would say to anybody who's starting a brand, you've got to have starting a business, you've got to have a good accountant to keep you in check, you know, and we were just sort of doing everything as flying by the seat of our pants, really, which in the end cost us dearly, and we had to sell up to maintain the business. And at the time, I was really, I really wanted to pay all our creditors, because we worked with a lot of smaller independent people, and I didn't want them going out of business, so we paid all our creditors off, and I kept a job. So
and then the rest was history,
and the rest is the business has exploded since then. Yeah.
How different has it become from now compared to what it was then?
I think in the early days it was what you might call strict classicism.
Okay.
And it was incredibly edited, which worked at the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, these things evolve. When I look at what we were doing in, say, 1986, and I look at what we're doing today, everything in the early days was very structured, very good, beautifully made, but it sold to a niche market. So over the years, everything's got lighter, got softer.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still, we've sort of moved it along as our customers have wanted to have, you know, they wanted things which were lighter, they wanted things that were softer.
Yeah.
And so we moved it along as we felt appropriate for our customers.
Right.
So the essence of it is still there.
Yeah.
And it's selling to a younger Hackett customer, which is good.
Yeah.
You know.
But it still has its classic form.
Yeah. I mean, compared to fashion, it's classic.
It's classic,
I like to think that I would look at fashion and take from fashion what I think is appropriate and can work for Hackett. And sometimes when you can either be too early or too late. So it's all about timing with clothing, you know. You get the timing wrong, or you go too fashion, you lose your customers.
When you say fashion, in what way are we talking about fashion in menswear?
Well, I mean, if I look... I mean, I'm on Instagram, I look through all the fashion stuff, and some of it is, I mean, I just couldn't sell it in my shops.
No, of course not.
It'll work for those people who are in that business.
Yeah.
That's what they're all about. But, you know, the whole mixing, this sort of gender fluid thing, which is really huge now, is a difficult thing for our Hackett-based customer to understand. Or, you know, if I started making skirts and things, I understand that there's, you know, a company that starts doing that and making their business that, I understand that they do that. But for us, we would look as though we were trying too hard and trying to be cool.
Yeah.
And there's nothing worse than trying to be cool and not getting it right.
Yeah.
You know, people wouldn't understand it from us.
Yeah.
I remember making a pullover a few years ago.
Yeah.
I was wearing this old Shetland crew neck navy blue that I'd had for years, and it had gone into holes. And underneath the sweater, I was wearing a blue and white striped shirt. And I thought, well, that looks good.
Yeah.
So I made some sweaters with holes already in it, because at the time, patches on sweaters were everywhere. And I thought, well, I'll do it without patches.
Yeah.
And they were beautiful. Absolute disaster. Because it wasn't what our customers expected from us. Now, if it had been Comme des Garçons, they'd have sold out probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they didn't come to Hackett to buy a sweater with holes in.
So it's like, basically, with brands, if once you have your customer, it's basically pleasing them as well, more than ever.
Yeah, it's looking after them, yeah.
Right, okay.
And understanding how far you can go with it to keep that customer without going over the top. But, you know, sometimes I like to think you can put the odd surprise in. Sometimes it's a complete disaster, but other times it just, for whatever reason, takes off and you can then carry on doing it for a couple of seasons. It's...
From the day you started Hackett, right, to compare to now, it's grown so much. It's huge, right?
Yeah.
Do you look back and just think, you know, to yourself, wow, I've done that? Or do you say to yourself,
not really, because you're so...
it took me a hard work.
I think I've been very fortunate. I've never really worked in my life, you know. It's
true, I understand that.
And in fact, if I wasn't doing this, I'd probably be unemployed, you know, because I'm useless at anything else. So, but, you know, I have an idea about stuff and how I like to put things together.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's the way you put things together, rather than being completely innovative about it, is how you put these classic clothes together.
Yeah.
That people think, oh yeah, that looks good, and that sort of worked for us. You know, it's.
Do you see the classic coming in more and more now, or do you think it? Do you think the classic menswear is its market more now?
Well, I think it depends on the brand that is wanting to do classic. I mean, we have a reputation for being a classic brand, so it works for us. It might not necessarily work for another brand.
Yeah.
It's. You know, it depends on the people behind it, the way they put it together. Because, you know, you walk up and down Savile Row and people could think in one, oh, well, it's all the same stuff. But it isn't, because everybody has their own identity about what they do.
Yeah.
And I believe we have that here. And having only been here 4 years, our business has grown tremendously. And we have some fabulous customers. It's a very specialised business, and the people who like bespoke just come here. They don't make a big noise about it.
No.
It's not trying to get fashion press or anything. I know that I think most of the shops here, the firms down here are now doing very well. I think they've opened up a little bit more than when I first worked in the 70s,
it was
quite sort of, recommend. Not they'd moved on from the recommendation thing, but it was still a little bit snooty. But I think it's opened up a lot.
I think it's changed a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like to think that, you know, anybody who walks through the door is made welcome, because you just never know. And to be honest, the people who are the best customers, often you look at them twice and think,
no.
Then you start talking to them and, you know.
Yeah.
And I say to the boys in the shop, if somebody comes in and you're not doing anything, you might as well chat away to them for an hour or so. What else? And then suddenly, they're sort of, you've given them a cup of coffee or a drink or something, and they say, oh, well, maybe let's have a look at some cloth. You just never know.
With your time, you spend a lot of time here.
Yeah.
What do you do when you're not here? How do you switch off from the brand, switch off from Hackett totally?
Do you know, I don't really switch off.
All right, okay.
Because all the time, whether I'm out having lunch or in a restaurant and I just see somebody across the way and I think, God, that looks really good, that suit on that guy, or some of the detail or something, I think, oh, that's good, I must remember that, you know. I can't help it. I'm walking down the street and I see people And I take photographs all the time as well. Yeah. That's probably my hobby, taking pictures.
Yeah,
I don't profess to be a photographer, but I like taking pictures. And so that's probably what I do when I'm not actually in the shop.
Jeremy, did you feel like when you fell into menswear, did you start feeling like this is it, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life now?
No, I didn't think that. Okay. It just happened.
Okay.
You know, and as I say, it was the only thing I knew vaguely something about. But and I have to confess that I'm not a tailor. I can barely sew a button on. But fortunately, I know people who can.
Yeah.
But I know how things should, what goes together, what looks well together.
Yeah.
And that's basically, you know, what I do, really.
I know you, I mean, you're very humble about what you've done, but you've done a lot,
yeah.
If you think about it. I mean, Hackett is a very well-known British brand. It's well-known around the world. So
yeah, it's pretty well-known, yeah.
You've done a lot, if you think about it.
Well, a while ago, we got involved in a lot of sponsorship deals.
Okay.
And one of the first ones we did was with the Army.
Right.
And we sponsored Army Polo.
Okay.
And that resulted in making the Hackett Polo shirt. I'm sure you know about the Hackett Polo shirt. And that really gave us recognition, huge recognition.
Yeah.
And so we sponsored this polo, and they said to us, oh, you've got to put Hackett on the shirt so the players know the team and everything.
Yeah.
So we put the Hackett on, big Hackett on the front of the shirt, and the numbers on the sleeves and the back. And I made 50 for the shop. And I thought, well, maybe they'll sell. I had no idea. We put them into the shop one Saturday morning. By the end of the day, they'd all gone.
Wow.
And that was the beginning of the Hackett polo shirt. And at the time, nobody was doing any shirts with numbers on or huge graphic like that. And for me, it was, we can do it because we're sponsoring polo. It's for the polo. We weren't just slapping our name on the shirt without any credibility.
Yeah.
And it was huge. And then we started using the George Cross, because I got fed up of seeing people coming into the shop wearing Ralph Lauren Stars and Stripes pullover. So I thought, let's make one with the George Cross on it, because we couldn't do the Union Jack, because Union Jack was in having trouble too nationalistic. So I thought, well, nobody's using the George Cross.
Yeah.
Let's do that. So we put the George Cross on pullovers, sold incredibly well, and then we put them on the polo shirt.
Yeah.
And it coincided with, I don't know, some big football, Euro something or other.
Yeah.
And we were selling thousands of these Hackett polo with the George Cross on the sleeves and the back. And then it started appearing on television, football fans fighting each other and all that.
Yeah.
And so, of course, the press caught on to all this, and they were saying to me, well, you know, how do you feel about all this, you know, trying to have a little dig at me about getting something controversial out of me. And I said, well, you know, we sell from football terraces to Georgian terraces, country estates to council estates.
Yeah.
And that sort of took the wind out of their sails, and we just moved on to another question. But you know, it was quite controversial at the time, so we backed away from it quite a lot. And, you know, but it made the name big.
Yeah, I know.
Really,
I remember.
Yeah,
I remember it. How because I remember seeing it.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was quite controversial.
It was, yeah.
And it's.
Well, it went through a bad period, and then the George Cross went through a bad period, and now the Union Jack seems to be okay to use now. But it's funny, because in America, the Stars and Stripes is celebrated everywhere. And we're sort of very nervous about celebrating the Union Jack here, because of the sort of track record. Which is a shame, but, you know.
Moving on to the style of Hackett, Jeremy Hackett. What is your style? Apart from the classics, do you ever wear jeans?
Well, you know, recently I had some denim trousers made.
Did you?
Yeah.
Bespoke?
Yeah.
Cool.
Because I thought, you know, at my age,
Yeah.
Wearing jeans, I don't know, I just didn't feel, I sort of gone back. I have worn jeans for years, you know.
Okay.
The sort of really good Levi ones that they used to sell in Cinch, I think.
Yeah.
The proper heavy old denim.
Right.
But then I sort of grew out of that sort of look. And so I thought, well, I'll try a pair of denim bespoke trousers. And yeah, they were great. Double pleated, side adjusters, braces.
Wow. Denim. It's a totally different look of denim.
Yeah. Which I thought was quite, you know.
quite unique.
Yeah. And then as they get older and they fade, they look like sort of old sailing trousers.
Yeah.
A nice look that you could sell to a young person.
And you can sell
who sees it as maybe a fashion thing.
Yeah.
You sell it to an older customer who thinks, yeah. Oh yeah, I haven't seen that sort of trouser for years, you know, it'd be perfect for when I go sailing or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
I wore it a lot in the '70s. Yeah.
But do the customers here who come here, would they ever turn around and say, could you bespoke me denim trousers? Would they ever say that?
Well, they might not think about it, but then if you introduce it.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. They'd be up for it.
They'd be up for
it. Yeah. Okay. And we made white denim as well.
Yeah, white denim, I can imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's a twill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and it's Japanese denim, so it's really good. Yeah.
What's the next step for Hackett? Are you allowed to tell us what you're thinking of doing next with Hackett?
Well, we've got a few things in the pipeline. We continue to open shops around the world.
Okay.
So there are a few projects in the pipeline at the moment, and we've just started a wholesale range and a ready-to-wear Savile Row range that we're selling in the Hackett shops around the world,
okay.
In selected Hackett shops around the world.
Yeah,
and we just opened a shop in Bond Street, which is just selling exclusively ready-to-wear 14 Savile Row.
Okay.
So I think we've realise there's an opportunity to sell at a higher level,
right?
And this really would be our premium range of Hackett London.
Wow. Did you ever think Hackett was going to be this big?
No, it never occurred to me.
Did it not?
No. No.
I bet your father was.
And it sort of just sort of creeps up on you as well, you know. First you have 5 shops, and then you've got 10 shops, and then you've got 20, and then you've got several hundred around the world, you know. It just sort of seems to happen.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it never, when you first began, you never thought, you know, I'm going to become a massive brand.
I just did it as a bit of fun.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's all for fun.
It was, yeah. And the funny thing, it started to make money, which, you know.
Which is great.
Was great.
It was great. Which is always great.
In fact, I think I was better off in those early days than I am today. Financially, not, you know. But anyway.
I'm going to ask you a question that may be a bit, I don't know, Ralph Lauren and yourselves, Hackett and Ralph Lauren.
Yeah.
Now, I know Ralph Lauren has its polos, and you guys have your polos as well.
Yeah.
Did they see it first with you guys?
Well, it's funny because they had, they're obviously called Polo.
Yeah.
But I don't think they actually did very much with the game of Polo.
Yeah. And Hackett has done more with polo.
I believe so. I think they're probably doing more now than they used to.
Yeah.
But they didn't start putting the numbers on their polo shirts until, I don't know, a few years ago.
Right.
And I think they may have been inspired by Hackett.
It's a very controversial question, I'm sorry, but I needed to know.
But, yeah, you know, I once did a...
because I always think...
An interview with Susie Menkus
at
one of her luxury summits. And she said, oh, can you tell me what the difference is between you and Ralph Lauren? And this is a question I've always dreaded coming up, but at that moment I just came up with this answer was, well, Ralph Lauren is New England, Hackett is Old England.
Wow.
And I thought that was a neat way of sort of, you know, explaining the difference.
It's a very good explanation.
Yeah. And I think I think what he's done is remarkable for such a huge business.
I think what he's done is remarkable, but I also think what you've done is remarkable as well.
Yeah.
So I think the both brands have done remarkably well in their own ways. And
well, he started off as a salesman in Brooks Brothers, yeah, so you know, he's come a long way.
Yeah.
You know.
So have you.
Yeah.
So have you. What's the what I was going to say is, how do you think if somebody wanted to start up their own brand now, which is quite, you know, there's a lot of menswear brands out there now.
Yeah.
What would you say to them? And what would you advise them?
The first thing I think that with anybody who starts, I think you don't start off with a brand. You build a business which becomes a brand.
Okay.
I don't think you open the shop doors and say, I'm a brand. What most people do these days.
Yeah.
At that point, you've got to earn the ability to be called yourself a brand, I think.
Yeah.
And we never called ourselves a brand until quite a few years into the business when we realised that, oh, maybe this is a brand. But I think the important thing is you have to have a point of view.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just make stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it's... I hate to use the word consistent, but you have to have a philosophy around it that people start to understand and they think, oh yeah, I'll go to that shop because they do this, that and the other, you know. So, and then you build a loyal clientele. It's, I don't think you can keep swapping and changing unless it's in the view of the designer or whoever it is that they're following some sort of path, you know. It's, people have got to understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's called Hackett because it's under your surname,
yeah.
Hackett. Did you always wanted to call it Hackett?
Did I?
Did you always wanted to call
it Well, Hackett? You know, that's a funny story because my partner, Ashley Lloyd Jennings,
yeah.
He and I, we both had a shoe shop in Covent Garden in the late 70s.
Right.
We ran it for about 3 years and it was called Lloyd Jennings. And it was tough. So anyway, we closed the shops. And went back to buying second-hand clothes and selling to our colleague in Paris.
Okay.
And so when we opened the shop, we didn't have a name for it for the first 6 months. So everybody called it the shop with the funny round window. It was like a little Art Deco-looking shop.
Yeah.
Really nice. And we said, what are we going to call it? And we sort of said, well, let's call it Hackett. Because it was before it was Lloyd Jennings in his name.
Yeah.
So well, let's call it Hackett.
And that was it?
That was it. Yeah. We didn't go to any marketing agency to help guide us to what we should call this brand.
Love it.
Oh, shop, you know.
This whole journey just seems like the most comfortable journey.
Well, it did have its ups and downs, but you know, generally it was pretty good. Yeah.
Jeremy, who are you inspired by?
Well, a little bit like earlier, is the people I see out and about inspire me. You know, when we opened that shop in Fulham, I was dressing the people who lived in Fulham,
right?
Who were the sort of young professionals, and we got tagged with the name Sloane Rangers,
right?
And so we were selling to young army officers, young lawyers, university students, because we were selling secondhand dinner jackets and all that sort of stuff, So they were our customers in the early days. And we also were heavily involved in three-day eventing.
Right.
So we would take stands at all those sort of horse shows around the country, out of a tent and things, which was great fun. Yeah. And they did very well. And so we captured that sort of English country business, as well as the sort of young sort of city guys. And we were offering them something that they couldn't get ready-made at the time.
Right.
You know, nobody did three-button suits and pleated trousers and suits with braces. And I mean, the whole braces thing was huge at the time. And and then we did proper corduroy jackets, corduroy trousers and tweed jackets. And I mean, in a way, it was almost like mufti, you know, what army officers wore. Off duty.
Yeah.
And I do remember that an army officer came in one day with an Arab sheikh, and he said, who was just joining Sandhurst, and he said, can you dress this chap for us?
Okay.
He came in his robes and everything, and went out in a tweed jacket and corduroy trousers and suede shoes and a trilby. I mean, the transformation was unbelievable. And he's probably back in, I don't know, Saudi Arabia or somewhere now. But Yeah.
Totally different.
Yeah.
Sure. Totally different.
Yeah.
Any regrets?
Well, it would have been nice to have held on to it a bit longer, but you know. Yeah, I regret that I didn't have a good accountant. Yeah.
To have an accountant.
I think it just sort of balances things and stops you getting carried away with opening another shop when maybe it's not the right time, or it's too much money, or you know.
I've seen a lot of businesses like that.
Yeah, you get carried away with how well it's all going. I mean, our biggest mistake was to open a shop in America.
Okay.
Before we really understood the market, and it was an isolated shop away from England, and
okay.
We didn't have the infrastructure or the understanding of the market, and you know, that cost us a lot of money. But it's funny how it all happened. Really, there was a program called I think the Today program, or the Money program. And they were talking about English brands being bought by the Japanese.
Yeah.
And at the end of the program, they said, is Hackett going to be the next brand to be bought by the Japanese?
Yeah.
And the acquisition director of Dunhill at the time heard this on the radio on his way home.
Yeah.
He immediately called us and said, can I come and see you tomorrow? He came and saw us the next day. We had a beer in the pub next door and a packet of crisps. By the Wednesday, the deal was done.
Oh, wow.
So it was the Dunhill Group that bought us because they saw the opportunity of, rather than a Japanese brand buying us, they bought us.
Oh, I never knew that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So it's owned by also
Dunhill? Well, no, not anymore. Dunhill then sold it on to the Pepe Group. And
okay.
That's sort of, yeah.
Wow, I never knew that.
Yeah.
That was very quick.
It was very quick. Well, they were desperate to get it. Yeah. Because it was a little bit under the radar, but they saw the opportunity. Yeah.
So on that note, the last question I would say, would you say it's all been about being passionate about what you love doing? And it's never been like work, because you've been so passionate with it, and it doesn't feel like work.
No, I think, like I said, I've never really worked a day in my life, or what I would call work. I feel that, you know, I've done very well getting away with it for all these years. You know? One day I'm going to be found out, oh, that Mr. Hackett, you know.
You haven't worked a bit enough.
No. But, I am absolutely passionate about clothing. Right. Good clothing, good cloth.
Yeah.
Things that are well made, properly made. I mean, craftsmanship is for me, is, you know, whether it's an umbrella or a tie or something, I just love it, you know. And I think I probably inherited that from my mother.
Okay,
who had her clothes made and everything. And, but that's another story.
That's another story, part two. thank you so much for doing this, Jeremy, coming on to Menswear by One podcast. It's been an absolute amazing and an honour to have you on board.
Yeah.
And
I've only really told you a little bit. But anyway.
Well, I'm sure there will be another part to this, because I'm hoping there will be a second part to this. But I just wanted to say that the journey from where you started with Hackett to where it is now, it is an amazing story. You should be so proud of what you've done and how much it has done for British menswear.
Yeah.
It's done huge for British menswear.
That's very kind.